Yeah, this is our last session, our closing session for the conference, and we are really delighted to be able to bring in Roger Bryatt, who is the flag representative from the Northern Territory. Roger has a great deal of experience in strategic planning within the armed forces and also in leading education here, and has had a significant role in China as well. And he is Director of Training Services in the Northern Territory government. And we are delighted. He's going to talk to us today about an Aboriginal festival called Garma. Some of you may know of it, but I'll let him tell you all the details. He's going to give a presentation. We're using Adobe Connect, thanks to Stefan's technical expertise and Katharina helping us at the other end in the Northern Territory. So I'll hand over to Roger now, and there will be opportunity for questions at the end. Thank you.
Thanks, Melanie, and welcome to you all this afternoon. I'm very pleased to be able to share with you the next 20 to 30 minutes on some experiences that we've had this year in the Territory in trying to close the gap and break down some of the barriers that currently exist between Indigenous Australians, you know, under what I consider access and equity issues. Melanie briefly provided an overview of my background. A lot of it has been, you know, within military construct. A lot of that was done overseas in third world countries with capacity building programs. I've got a particular, I suppose, interest in capacity building, which is where I drove a master's study out of in international relations, more importantly looking at how to break down some barriers. I'm a very big advocate for hearts and minds theory, which is endeavouring to get into the culture and the customs of people in order to embed learning. And certainly the Territory is going through some significant challenges at the moment in the education sector, in schooling in particular, with attendance levels and at overall interest levels of families in wanting to engage in education slash training. On the back end of you know, what's been a pretty tumultuous couple of years in the Northern Territory post the intervention, where communities have been inundated with services, they've been inundated with people, they've been inundated with everybody else's ideas on how they should live. It's great to see that there are still a number of cultural iconic festivals conducted in the Northern Territory. Part of my thinking as the NT flag member and also as the Director of Training, Higher Education, is really about how to engage people at the grassroots level in order that we embed it early in their life. I think I'm lucky in one sense in that as the Director of Training in the Northern Territory, my portfolio covers not only vet services but also higher educational services. It also covers off on ICT, and I sit on the Australian ICT Education Council. It covers the ACE sector, and I sit on the National Body for Adult Community Education. It covers infrastructure, and I sit on a national peak body for infrastructure. And funnily enough, I also sit on, for some reason, the National Strategy for Energy Efficiency, which is around green skills, the green skilling sector. So it's pretty broad. You know, my other counterparts around the country have more of a silo effect on training in isolation, whereas I get to look at it from probably six or seven different viewpoints, which provides me with, I think, probably a more rounded approach to how to face it. The Garma Festival for me, one of my privileges in the military was to command Australia's Northwest Mobile Force, which is a surveillance and intelligence regiment that stretches across the top of Australia. And of that, we had, of the 650-odd people in that, more than half were actually Indigenous and came from the top end of the Cape across the Northern Territory and into the Kimberley. So a lot of my responsibility was actually out with elders and communities and cultural festivals and customs, where I saw very much the strength of learning coming out of traditional methods. So I wanted to try and, I suppose, blend two worlds, which was to take an e-learning perspective from VET and embed it into cultural festivals such that the participants, of which there were around 3,000, could actually see that the two could live together and try and embed it in an interest level. The other aspect was is that we also had a number of courses that were traditionally run, or not so much courses, but non-accredited types of activities that were run around the preparation for GAMA. GAMA is very high profile. It's run by the Yothu Yindi Foundation, the Yunupingu family, which fortunately through my time in the military I had a lot to do with. So early discussions started with them about how we might be able to tie up some of these activities that happen around GAMA into more formally accredited courses around construction, multimedia, tour guiding, and other types of activities. So I brought together on a planning committee some vet practitioners, representation through FLAG, through our Service Industry Training Advisory Council, with the concept that, you know, we'd get involved early in this and we'd use this as our showcase or our premier activity for the territory for the year from a FLAG perspective, from an e-learning perspective. We took a lot of footage there, but I think we've been able to cut it down to about 4 to 5 minutes today. And I'd like to just play you now a video just to set the scene for you about what happened at GAMA and some of the key messages. I'll do a wrap-up at the end and then I'll take some questions. So we'll see how we go. So over to you, Mel. We'll play the video. Just while it's loading, the festival is set in Arnhem Land. It's traditionally a men's ceremony where the Yolngu youth would go out and do men's business for a couple of weeks on the plateau which overlooks Arnhem Land. It's a phenomenal area, very steeped in culture and you know, Indigenous pride, and we were really pleased to be able to get that as a location. The highway that you see when you'll see the video is actually the highway from Darwin out to Gove. It's open about 7 months a year. Just take note of the type of, I suppose, infrastructure challenges that we've got as far as getting to and from and engaging in these communities, and more importantly, in areas like Gove or Nullumbuy, top-end communities, even as far as, you know, the Catherine Tennant Creek and our desert communities, we've got significant challenges.
Didn't you kill a Malu on the way out? A Malu is
mobile adult learning unit, yeah. Yeah, look, you'll see some pictures of Malus as part of the VO presentation. Yes, we do. They do get, to use the word, flogged. To think that we're taking 18-wheel transporter units out on corrugated gravel roads through some sort of 13 river crossings on the way, of which, as I said, can only be done in the dry season because the wet, the roads are closed. So you can rely upon either the barges to get out to the communities or hopefully link into some of these new initiatives via the government through the Vocational Education Broadband Network or the National Broadband Network.
Yeah, it'll just be a few minutes while we're going to do it locally, but actually there are three other videos available, aren't there, Roger, on your Northern Territory site?
Yeah, there were some videos that were taken early in GAMA, so I did an introductory video, and then I did a couple of updates on day one and day two around some of the scheduled activities that we had planned. A phenomenal amount of interest generated from all of the communities, and it's flowed on into a real interest through my own department into the delivery of training. We're looking at doing... One of the things we actually looked at out there was point-of-view glasses, which are a pair of safety sunglasses with a built-in webcam in the brow of the glass. It enables up to 6 to 8 hours of video recording. And for a lot of our remote communities where we've got to do Cert 1 and Cert 2 courses that require trainers to go out there, it's a huge cost to go out and train one or two people or three people in the community when there's 10 other communities that need the training in a sort of 2,000 or 3,000 square kilometre, you know, box. So one of the things we're looking at early next year as part of the framework is to do a point of view glasses project based on some RPL. So send you know, these out to communities with some Indigenous based trainers remotely, so that the boys can wear them during the day while they do, you know, small engines, or they do some chainsawing, or they do some hospitality type training, and that way we can then upload the actual data itself back to a trainer in a central location in Catherine or Darwin, and he can view it over night time and then make the necessary assessments, you know, on it, and give him feedback via email or text message back to what he needs to do, put wears on the next day, and then updates his training.
It's a really brilliant concept, the point of view, and the fact that you can actually they're simple and easy to post or courier out. They're not big, heavy equipment. They have long battery life, and they're pretty intuitive to use. And I love the videos that were on the Northern Territory website, because they actually also, as I'm sure this will, it's just, they actually capture the real spirit of the day. You actually feel like you're almost there, and you can sense how exciting it is. And I think it would be absolutely fabulous. I would like to go to that festival myself now after seeing those videos, because I think it would be such a unique experience. But I think it's Indigenous only, isn't it, Roger?
No. It's open to international guests. I mean, this year we had Peter Garrett and Jenny Macklin gave keynote addresses. We had about 400 international guests from overseas. There was about 800 paying white Australians who were either academics or had interests in training or interests in Indigenous culture and the like. So no, it's in fact, next year's theme is actually education and training. So our idea this year was to engage, because this year's was traditional culture, and I wanted to take the training theme to Indigenous culture. So really it was a matter of, you know, we took on the hard yards this year and we had significant wins. And next year we're actually, you know, able to engage them in our own game, which is, you know, education and training. I think we've made some significant advancements.
I think there'd be a lot of interest. We have, as you know, New South Wales has a very large, obviously not as large as Northern Territory, we have a very large Indigenous population. There's several people here I know who are working with those organisations in language development and teaching and with youth, with Deadly Skills and Deadly Futures projects. A lot of interest. I'll have to talk to Mel Brenton, my counterpart, and we'll have to organise a very robust coach from Darwin.
Oh, absolutely. And look, it's amazing. You know, I can tell a couple of stories about technology from my perspective. I mean, we've got some remote training centres, one in particular in Borroloola, and I always love this story, but I went out for a few days. As the director of training, I load up a big GXL Land Cruiser with a swag and head out bush for a few days, you know, probably cover 5,000 or 6,000 kilometres in 7 days, about 1,800 or 1,000 k's a day, and, you know, arrive in communities to see and stay and view training and talk to industry and the like. And I was in Borroloola where we had state-of-the-art training centre, and I arrived in there in the daytime, you know, where there should have been training being done, and there was nothing being done. But, you know, there was local sport going on, and there was some local men's business going on and all sorts of activity. And as the day built up, you know, I went out and spent the evening with a number of people who are Indigenous people who I knew out there, and went to some different ceremony and some different meetings and some song and those sorts of activities. And it sort of started to hit me that trying to do this 9-to-5 mainstream vet delivery in remote communities, you know, it just isn't working. And we need to actually move into what is culturally acceptable. And, you know, the good thing about it was that the next evening at the training centre, I actually moved, I had my staff member out there move the projector outside onto the wall, and we played a replay of one of the early 2000 AFL Grand Finals on the side of the training centre wall, and we ended up with about 250 people there, you know, all sitting around watching it and using the training centre. So, you know, part of the discussion then moved into, well, if we can get that sort of a gathering of a night time in a training centre, why are we opening it from 9 to 5 when no one's attending? You know, why don't we move it into a more culturally acceptable time frame, you know, to run the training and the right focus on attention and bring people into the fold?
We're just about to cue the video, but I love that story about the data bro, because about the using the building in a different way, because, you know, we think about flexible learning, sometimes just being flexible with the bricks and mortar and the spaces that we're in. So that was a great story. We're about to show the video, and then Stefan will let you know when that's done.
Thank you.
Bye.
this year, for the first time at GAMA, we've embedded e-learning in the actual preparation of GAMA itself. For the 4 weeks leading up to GAMA, we've been running some competencies from a Certificate 2 in construction. So local Yolngu lads have picked up competencies in the development and the construction of the GAMA site through industry services training at one of our largest private RTOs. They're the ones with the Malu parked over here. Charles Darwin concurrently have been running courses around tour guiding, around music and around art multimedia concurrently as well, which this week is culminating. So we've chosen to show how embedding capability through e-learning can coincide with creative industries, can coincide with a cultural festival like this, and the two can add in a pathway in recognising that the old and the new can live together, and importantly there are key pathways that we have to understand and how better to deliver those opportunities to Indigenous people in remote locations so they continue on with their culture but still have creative pathways for employment and capacity building. Yeah, thanks, guys. Look, as I said, it's only a 3 or 4 minute snapshot. You know, there was hours of video footage taken, but I think the picture, you know, paints 1,000 words as far as, you know, the cultural aspect of it is. And you've got to remember that, you know, the Yolngu people, you know, have been in their land for thousands of years. And that festival, as I said, originated out of a men's business festival, which is very tightly held. As culture, very tightly held as a privilege is concerned. So, you know, it's expanded out now as an attempt after Galaroi Yunupingu was Australian of the Year and the Yotha Yindi band's national profile to, you know, to embrace Australians on, you know, the importance of culture and more importantly to show that, you know, that they are, you know, they are Australians as well, and they enjoy a festival and they enjoy celebration. There's no alcohol served there. It's a tented arrangement. People live around the bungle bungle. And, you know, it's just a fantastic environment. And you would have seen the interest from the video that was generated out of the Malus through the music, through multimedia, through tour guiding, through construction. And as I said, it's generated a significant amount of activity now out of those remote communities, remote northern communities, into accessing, you know, e-learning. We've used it as a trigger for our own profile as far as we've just finished an audit on all of our training centres. We've just finished an audit on our bandwidth under access and equity. We've just finished an audit on our server capability in order to get more capability out to the bush. The other interesting thing is we've got a number of projects under the innovation banner this year around toolboxes where we're actually taking toolboxes and indigenising the content. So we've actually taken some toolboxes and we are getting them translated into the language, and the actual supporting side of the toolbox is also being changed such that if it's a desert community and they're viewing a toolbox content for a PowerPoint, it's actually got local pictures and local people around rather than, you know, Indigenous people are very proud of their skin group, very proud of their language, and the last thing you need is if it's a desert community, they're watching something about, you know, a coastal community or the sea or vegetation that's not local to them. They actually want it localised, and those projects will be finished this year. And I've had some discussions with the flag member from New South Wales, Simon, with regard to some shared projects for next year that, you know, we can share with New South Wales some of our experiences, some of our successes, and, you know, we can possibly learn from each other, because I think collaboration in this area nationally is very, very important. Mm-hmm. We are forever struggling in the Territory on the basis that when it comes to national funding, we get 1% funding model because we're 1% of the population.
Right.
You know, we own 12% of the nation's Indigenous people, so we're up against some significant challenges when it comes to resourcing.
Mm-hmm.
Look, I'm happy to open the floor to any questions, or if you'd like me to expand upon any other areas, then please do so. So I might throw it back to you, Mel.
Thanks very much, Roger. And I think you've raised some really interesting points there, and it's great to hear that there's some possibility of collaboration. And there's one product in particular, while people are thinking perhaps of a question or a comment, that I saw out of Northern Territory last year and I believe has been upgraded this year. It's called Power Up, and it's a fantastic resource developed under an innovations-funded program of instructions for using some Web 2 tools. A fantastic resource. You just, if you put Power Up into your Google search, you'll find it, and it's beautifully crafted, and it has a lot of Indigenous. It is for Indigenous people, but I actually recommend it to everybody because it's just beautifully designed. Any questions?
In fact, Mel, there's a project this year which is actually Power Up Plus,
yep,
which is an upgrade again to that product, which you'll see the Plus product by the end of this year.
Thank you. Any questions? Yes, we have a question. Thanks. This is Bronwyn Campbell from ADAS, Australian Diving.
Just a very quick question, hopefully a simple one. All of those laptops in the back of that truck, how do you power them up?
By generator. So the generator that's on board, the Malu, sets up a local area network. So it's got its own server, and as soon as the truck fires up and the generator fires up, it actually sets up a LAN, and it sets up a wireless so that you can actually have kids outside on laptops under a wireless environment in the bush. And the fantastic side is, of this is you can actually set it up as a internet cafe at night time. So they can come in and look up AFL, and they can come in and look up all the respective sporting side of it. And it's not even about getting to understand VET at the stage. It's actually embedding the use of technology, and whether that's just accessing the internet or whether that's standing next to somebody accessing the internet, it just breaks down that barrier of using ICT products, and more importantly from our perspective, it breaches that ever-widening gap of access and equity.
Mm. Any other questions? Yes, we have one up the front here. Sandra, microphone's just coming.
You mentioned that you were indigenising the toolboxes. Will you be making them generically enough to use across states for Indigenous population?
I think the biggest challenge there is actually the language.
Yes.
There's no doubt that once, you know, the essence of the learning content is understood by local people, to get a provider who can actually indigenise the content is there. I think what's important is that, you know, if an Indigenous training provider from Western New South Wales gets a copy of the ENT product, they're going to be able to see, you know, how it's been constructed and what the key messages are in translation, because what's important here is that, you know, there are words in Yolngu that don't exist in English, and there are words in English that don't exist in Yolngu, or Jawan, or any of the other 100-odd languages spoken in the Territory. So I think it's more about the collective understanding of the translation and such that the message is not missed rather than the specific language. So I think in the learning content management, that's where the key message is, so that, you know, maybe going forward, a collaboration between the two states about a toolbox, and it could be done concurrently, so that, you know, an NT provider and a New South Wales provider look at a training package and they develop it concurrently next to each other. And I think that would be really interesting to see how the key messages flow through, maybe with a language from Western New South Wales and a language from the desert country of the Northern Territory. So that's really the key message we've looked at. The language wouldn't be applicable, but certainly the learning content and how it's articulated and presented is probably the best way forward.
Mm. It's a very good one. Thank you.
But this has come out of collaboration at the highest level. As I said, you know, Simon and I have had some great discussions in Melbourne or wherever we've been about the innovation aspect of going forward. You know, we've got some significant challenges here, and we're never going to have the financial resources or the human resources to meet it. So for us, innovation, you know, and, you know, intuitive thinking is probably the best process for this. And, you know, Indigenous people in their own right, you know, over thousands and thousands of years, have themselves been, you know, innovators and intuitive thinkers. So I think, you know, as we move forward, we've got to start thinking along the lines of working with our Indigenous partners through ceremony and through understanding of culture. If I could recommend maybe a book to you that I think actually should be in every year, 6 year, 7 year, 8 primary school, it's called Why Do Warriors Lay Down and Die? It's written by a fellow by the name of Richard Trudgeon, who was a Northern Territorian who, in his younger years, in his teens, ended up in Manangaroo, and up in the Northern Yolngu country as a mechanic, and started to understand Indigenous culture and needed apprentices and started to understand how to teach, and he taught them and they taught him, and ended up being initiated into Yolngu mob, and took a local wife and has spent his life and studying in anthropology and all sorts of different qualifications to understand how better to deliver training and how better to deliver their culture and understand their culture. As I said, he's written a book called Why Do Warriors Lay Down and Die, and you know, it is a phenomenal journey that he writes from a white man's perspective of, you know, what the demise of Indigenous culture has been, in particular traditional Indigenous culture. You know, I'm talking here about communities that live a traditional lifestyle where they have, you know, a wet season community, but dry season homelands where they all go out onto their homeland country. You know, schooling is difficult because they're so separated as far as, you know, the clan is concerned. You know, still live traditional lifestyle with hunting, still live ceremony, you know, young men initiations. They still live a full traditional lifestyle. And this book, as I said, if you are interested in culture and you're interested in the Indigenous story and a greater understanding of how we can actually bridge that gap, I'd recommend that book to you. But as I said, you know, in closing, I think events like this in showcasing what are the jurisdictions doing is the way forward. I certainly welcome continued discussions with New South Wales and the flag rep Simon as to how better we can go forward. And, you know, in a collaboration perspective, you know, if we are looking at this from a national profile, then I think we're going to get far better outcomes. And, you know, I'd much prefer to, you know, do it on that basis. And certainly look out for the Garma Festival next year. I think it's about 4 or 5 days. And if you want to invest in your own understanding of Indigenous culture and, you know, you want to perhaps even change your mindset on you know, Indigenous Australians and their capability and capacity to live in, you know, in our domain, then come up and have a look. And not only that, but it's also a great learning experience. You can do, you know, programs from spear making to boomerang making to weaving to, and as I said, listen to federal ministers to the whole cultural experience.
It sounds wonderful, Roger.
Yeah. Okay, cool. So, as I said, that's really the summing up side of it. And once again, thanks very much for the invite to engage you this afternoon.
Yeah, well, thank you very much for your time. Yeah, thank you very much, Roger. It's a lovely way that you've concluded your remarks in talking about recommending a book about a relationship between a white man and a black woman, because you may remember, those who were here yesterday, that Jennifer Newman started this conference referring us to a conversation to a very similar relationship, not a marriage but a friendship that lasted many years, that opened the eyes of a white man to the wisdom and culture and practices and language of the Aboriginal culture of Sydney. And I just think, I mean, I thought it was going to be nice to have an opening with Indigenous to our local country, or an acknowledgement, and to finish with another sort of different culture. I could never have imagined we were going to have such a neat bookending. So we've got some great resources to go out and enlarge our thinking and our understanding. So thank you for that, and we also thank Jennifer for hers. So we've come to the end of the conference. So thank you for coming.